Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the LeadX Leadership Show. I am Kevin Cruz. I'm the CEO and founder of LeadX. I am a New York Times bestselling author of Great Leaders Have No Rules, 15 Secrets Successful People Know About Time Management, Employee Engagement 2.0, and blah, blah, blah. This is the show where we're trying to help you to stand out and get ahead at work. We're trying to help you to become the leader you've always wished you had for yourself. And before we introduce our guest today, I do want to encourage you to visit leadx.org and download our app. You got a free trial for 7 days. In fact, you can just go right onto the Apple Store or the Android Store, download the app, free trial for 7 days, and check out the book summaries so you can stay up and stay current on the best business ideas, but in 5 or 10 minutes per book instead of reading the entire book. Or go deeper with the authors in an archived library of webinars. You can hold your own lunch and learns on your own schedule. You can check out hundreds of micro learning videos. And if you're daring, take the Big Five personality assessment, discover your strengths and maybe some limitations, and then let our IBM Watson coach Amanda give you tips, send you nudges to make you the best manager, the best leader that you can be. All right, let's get to our interview. Today, I am speaking to somebody who's been working for over 20 years as an executive coach and as a trainer, as a seminar leader with hundreds of top executives around the world, Fortune 50 companies all over the world, very diverse background. He's written his first book. It's a gift to us. It's called Cracking the Leadership Code. Cracking the Leadership Code. What I love about this book is that it is extremely practical. So this isn't inspirational. This isn't just opinions or some academic model. This is how you break the patterns that you might have, because he's seen it in all of these clients over the years. Our guest is Alon Hunkins. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show.
Thanks so much, Kevin. It's great to be here with you today.
So I mentioned, you know, in the intro, you've got a brand new book, Cracking the Leadership Code. Congratulations. Why now? Why did you decide to put down your wisdom into a book?
Well, for me, this journey has been one of 23 years of working with thousands of leaders around the world. And what I started doing is I was watching and I saw these patterns of behavior and both the good stuff and the bad stuff. And I started taking notes, and the notes became stories, and the stories became blog posts. The blog posts became chapters, the chapters became parts, and ultimately led to this book, which is really in some ways a distillation of 23 years of experience of really getting into the ins and outs. You know, everyone wants to be a great leader, but what does that really mean? And ultimately, I think it boils down to the mindset we have and the choices that we make. And so the book is really this comprehensive guide to helping people accelerate their learning curve to become a better leader.
You said a couple of actually really important things there. And the first of which, you just gave away one secret to writing a book, which is don't think about writing a book. Think about writing a blog post and then another and another.
Exactly. I had a great mentor once, and I've been thinking about writing a book. I know lots of people have. I've been thinking about writing a book for 20 years. And I had a great mentor said a profoundly, obviously wonderful thing. He said, writers write. And I think the discipline of the blog, you know, and for me, it was really messy at the beginning, really messy and not very good, but really giving myself the discipline of, you know, one post a week and then sticking to that. And I did that for years, and that started to develop the discipline of writing.
And the other thing, you know, you mentioned about all of the work you've done, all the clients you have, is seeing patterns of behavior. And that's what I try to tell people. Like, everybody wants to be a great leader. We have usually the intent to be a great leader. Sometimes we have the knowledge to be a great leader, but it's sometimes tough to see our own negative patterns or to create new habits and patterns. And that's one of the things I liked about your book is not only is it, I mean, this is actionable. This isn't your inspirational climb to the top of the mountain leadership.
No.
This is like, do this and keep doing it, you know, and look out for these pitfalls. But before we get into these behaviors, you know, you say in the book that old school leadership has stopped working. So what maybe was old school leadership, and why has it stopped working?
Yeah. So if we think about what is old school leadership, you know, I saw this great quote recently, and I don't know who it's from, but they basically said that tradition is peer pressure that comes from dead people. And I just love that. And if we think about some of the traditions that we have around leadership, if we go back a few generations, you know, this whole idea of leading in organizations started in the Industrial Revolution. And the world was so different then. And the people who were in charge of figuring this out were engineers, mechanical engineers, who saw work as this mechanical problem to be solved. And that's where the term human resources comes from, because humans were seen as parts in a bigger machine. I mean, humans were not your competitive advantage. The factory was, and your big factory machines were your competitive advantage. So people, and again, back at this time, 95% of people were doing manual labor. And I get into all this history in the book, even in greater detail. But because people were treated that way, it was all about controlling and managing people. And the belief was that people were not to be trusted. And so there was this cauldron of fear and control. And that's what people put up with for a really long time, because part of the value proposition back then was, if you were a good worker and kept your head down and just did your job and just shut up and did what you were told, you'd have a job for life and you'd probably have a pension on the other end. Well, as we know, that world has gone away. And so if we look at, you know, today, 59% of the workforce is Gen Y and Gen Z, and people are craving a new type of leadership, because what we know, that the line between work and life, there's no more work-life balance. It's all one thing. It's your life. And so people are craving to work in organizations that have a clear sense of purpose, and they want leaders who are going to connect with them at a real human, empathetic level. And they want people who are going to communicate with them to be authentic. And they want to work on collaborative teams. And more people are working in a team environment, and they want transparency to be able to do that. So it's like the playbook has changed and leadership needs to catch up, because the rules of the game no longer apply. The old rules don't apply anymore.
And Elaine, this is the week that I've been doing a bunch of interviews with, a lot of thought leaders such as yourself. And I am hearing this recurring theme, which really shows that, you know, we need to pay attention and take action on this. Yesterday, I spoke to Doug Conant, former CEO of Campbell Soup, and big proponent of employee engagement. And he was making the same point. And of course, he's got a few years even on us in terms of experience and wisdom. And he said, you know, back when it was just about, you know, Industrial Revolution, okay, maybe IQ and some other things had some. When it became about relationships, then it's the EQ. And he said the same thing, though, that now the newest generation, it's about this, you know, this needing some mission and some motivation, you know, from a deeper level. It's like a whole new world, even beyond just like, oh, we got to figure out how to work on a team. And you sort of gave away like one of the, I'm always forgetting things, so I like simple models. And with your book, I'm telling people, you got to read this. It's about the three C's. And you know, you hinted at them, you know, connection, communication, collaboration. And in a short format podcast like this, we can't get too deep into anyone, but let's touch on them. And let's start with connection. And you write that empathy is really the basis for connection. Tell us more about that.
Sure. Yeah. If we get into connection, let's step back for just a quick moment. What is leadership? Right? Leadership at its core is a relationship, right? It's a human relationship between the person who leads and the person who chooses to follow. And so at the core of that is got to be a human connection. And that's what empathy is. And my favorite definition of empathy is showing people that you understand them and care how they feel. And, you know, on the surface, as you hear that, we can all step back and go, I get it. That makes complete sense. But actually, in the moment when we're all running too fast with too much to do, and we're not only leading, but also having to get our own projects done, empathy can get short shrift. And in fact, in the book, I go through six different challenges that people face to leading with empathy. I'll just give you an example of one. One is impatience, right? Because the fact is, to really care how people feel means I need to give them my undivided attention and my presence for a while. And if I got so much else going on, it's really hard to do that. So I go through six different challenges. And then I talk about some of the things, what we can do, simple actions that you can take to become more empathetic and strengthen your connection with people. An example of that is to listen with purpose, right? It's very different to listen to someone just, okay, go ahead, tell me, get it, got it, good. I hear what you're saying, versus really listening with purpose to seek to deeply understand where they're coming from and their perspective. Because the fact is, there's nothing like being heard and valued and understood that makes people feel connected, right? At our core, we all want to be seen, recognized, and valued. So if we want to lead, we need to understand that is the fast track to connection.
Elaine, this and that section on connection was the most important to me because part of why I'm so passionate about leadership and engagement is because I used to be such a horrible boss, such a horrible leader, you know, young and dumb in my 20s for sure, a little bit into my early 30s. And I was that guy who would walk, you know, would almost like jog from the conference room back to my office and be oblivious to the people that were walking past me because I was task focused. And sure. I wasn't being rude or not connecting on purpose. Back then, I just didn't know any better. So my mind is, I'm at work, I have a to-do list, there's never enough time, boom, 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 I'm task. If I was talking to you, I just wanted the information. Yeah. I didn't want anything other than the little piece of information, you know, that would advance that item.
Yeah, and that makes complete sense, Kevin, because if you think about how are we educated, I mean, and I talk about this as one of the other barriers to empathy. I call it's the right-wrong trap. You were educated in an educational system where there was a right answer and there's a wrong answer. So what you're describing was you were in this leadership role and you're like, just give me the right answer. And you didn't right. realize that actually the answer you're looking for isn't the most important thing going on. I had a great mentor because I very much fell into the same camp as you. And I had a great mentor who once said to me, Elaine, you know, one of your problems here is you're trying to get 100 on a pass-fail test. I mean, there are things that are more important than just trying to figure out what the answer is. Like, how is your relationship with the person giving it to you?
I love that. Trying to get 100 on a pass-fail test. For me, the feedback that finally like woke me up, I mean, I wasn't getting the business results I wanted. And then I would see comments in the 360 surveys that I eventually, you know, started doing. Like, he walks past me in the hallway and doesn't even make eye contact. Every Monday morning, he walks past me and never asks me how my weekend was. And, you know, these are, to me, like, I didn't know anybody cared. Like, you're right. It's not that I was ignoring you or being rude on purpose. And certainly as I got older and chilled out a little bit, I got more in touch with my own feelings and connections and things. And even something simple, like something that, I mean, it comes natural to me now, but at first it was something I learned from a mentor, was when you're talking to somebody and doing all the normal active listening things, even the phrase just, tell me more. I mean, three words, you know, so you've, we're talking about something, you've said something, the old Kevin would have interrupted you and cut you off.
Yeah.
A better Kevin would have listened to the end. Today, often I'm going to say, tell me more or, and what else? And then that really tells the other person that you're trying to, you're not just waiting for your turn to speak. You're truly trying to grok what's going on here. And so again, that section on connection was very, helpful. What about communication? What are some of the obstacles we have at communication? How do we get better at that?
Sure. Yeah. It's really interesting. You know, if I look at the research that I did for the book and other research out there, when ask people, you know, what's the biggest barriers, biggest challenges you have at work? Communication always is right at the top of the list. And one of the things that I found is that there's three big obstacles to communicating well. If you think about it, why do we communicate, right? We don't communicate just for communication's sake. We communicate with the goal of creating shared and mutual understanding. And why is that so important? Because understanding becomes the platform on which we take all future action. And so if we don't have understanding, we start making decisions that are going to lead to bad outcomes and bad results. Whereas if we have good understanding, then we're going to make better decisions and more likely lead to better results. So one of the biggest challenges to communicating well is how do we get alignment between what people say, what they mean, and what we hear? And the lack of that alignment, so psychologists call that the projection bias. I'm sure you've experienced this, Kevin. It's when you unconsciously assume that other people are thinking the same thing that you are, because I'm thinking it must be clear. So a classic example of this, I mean, how many of us have been at work and you send an email and you think to yourself, well, I sent the email. They should know what to do. I mean, right? Because in your mind, it's clear and I've communicated it. but we don't know where other people are coming from. So this lack of clarity, lack of alignment is one of the biggest obstacles. Another one is the fact that there's just a massive amount of overload. You know, what we are thinking about is clear in our minds because, you know, the old game of telephone, right? In the game of telephone, it gets harder the further and further you go. But, you know, we oftentimes in the work context, we play the game of telephone with ourselves. It's as if, oh, I know what I mean. So therefore I'm right. Whereas other people have no clue. And so what are we doing to ensure we're getting confirmation? So I go through some challenges and then I go through six different tools and tips, techniques that people can use to make sure they're being effective. And I'll just share one here with you. It's really simple. It's asking for a receipt. I mean, how many of us have had the experience of going into a meeting and we maybe share some ideas and the ideas might even be really good. And then, oh, it's time to go. We wind up and everyone just leaves the meeting and no one has confirmed what anyone is doing with real specific action. So just asking for a receipt, you know, and it's funny, a funny, really great example I talk about in the book that brings this to life was, so in the fast food industry in the 1980s, it was horrendous. The drive-through process was a nightmare. It was really common for people to drive up and order their food through the intercom, and then they go up to the window to pick it up, and the orders would be wrong. And this happened consistently, and this went on for years. And then one day, it started that the drive-through mistake rates just started to plummet. You might think, well, what happened? Well, it turned out the fast food employees did a really simple thing. They started basically asking for receipt. They'd repeat the order back to the customer before they start to make it, just confirming that they understand that what you're saying is what you mean and that's what I heard. And so it's amazing to think how many of us don't do that on a given work day. And if you think, look, if Taco Bell will do this for a 99-cent taco, don't you think the work that we do is worth the same level of clarity? So that's just an example of bringing that to life.
As someone who worked the drive-through lane at Carl's Jr. in the early 1980s,
you're a living testament of this.
I'm a living testament to that. No, I think that's great. Real practical tip we can apply right away, which is good.
Yeah, all the tips are practical. Yeah,
with the third C, collaboration, and you I want to specifically ask you about motivation. And when the way you're talking about motivation, is that the same or different than a lot of people will talk about engaging your employees, employee engagement? Is that synonymous in your mind or not?
Not exactly. No. And here's one of the things. So we talked earlier about, you know, old school leadership being command and control. So this is connected to motivation because if you stop and think about it, you really can't motivate. You can't make someone else be motivated because if you try to make someone be motivated, what you're doing is you're falling into the old trap of commanding, like, okay, go be motivated now. Like that doesn't make any sense. Whereas what we can do, and I think our responsibility as leaders is how can we create the conditions where people are most likely to motivate themselves, which means that that's a different type of role. And what I call that is being a motivational choice architect. And that term choice architect comes out of the field of behavioral economics. So it's right. So there's a lot of great research that's about how do people make decisions? And there are things that we can do to nudge people in a certain direction. So for example, there's research that shows that if you want people to eat smaller portions of food, they're more likely to do so if you serve the food on smaller plates because the food appears to fill up more of the plate. So that's just one example. So if we think about traditional architecture, architects use points, lines, structure, blueprints to design buildings. Whereas motivational choice architects or leaders who want to do that, what we're working with are basic human needs. And in the book, I talk about four essential needs that people need to get met in order for them to thrive and be motivating themselves. And those needs are safety. And there's three levels to safety. There's fiscal, that's, you know, the money safety, that there's enough money. There's fiscal safety. There's physical safety, that you're working in a safe work environment, that you're not going to get hurt physically. And then there's psychological safety. So you've got safety. And then people also need energy. The fact is, if we go into work and it's just dull and boring and there's just no energy, that's how am I going to thrive? So what are things as leader I'm doing to promote energy? And I go through nine different examples of things you can do to create energy. Then there's a need that people have for purpose. So what are we doing as leaders to bring out and foster that people feel connected to something greater than themselves? That's about purpose. And then there's the sense of ownership, because we know that when people feel a sense of autonomy and then can make progress towards that meaningful goal, they're much more inspired and motivated to do that. So I go through specific techniques and tools that people can do as leaders to enhance and design an environment where people are going to motivate themselves.
Love it. We only have a few minutes left, and I actually want to, we've just barely scratched the surface. There's so much great practical stuff. But I want to end by asking you, and hopefully you'll remember from your own book, because I often forget some of my stories.
But yeah, sure.
Early in the book, you write about a district manager named Matt who works at a quick service restaurant, a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
And he was consistently for a long time, number one district manager managing several restaurants.
Yeah,
for a long time. But he didn't start that way. It wasn't like he just got handed the best stores or the best crew, or that he was just naturally great. He actually was, I think, middle of the pack kind of guy until something changed. Tell us about this story, because I think there's a lot of leadership wisdom in this very simple story.
Really simple story. So Matt was the number one DM out of 100 DMs that were all ranked against this battery. They call it the hot list. It's their key performance metrics. And when I met Matt, he was number one for a few years, but he, like you said, he hadn't started out there. So I said, so Matt, tell me what changed. Now, what changed for you along the way? And the way he described it is back in the day when he was very much kind of a mediocre, middle of the pack, bottom of the pack even, he said, I thought my role was to be the fixer. That, you know, I would get the reports from all the different restaurants, and he had about 10 restaurants he'd have to go and visit, go from place to place. I'd look at what was wrong and I'd figure out what they needed to do. And I'd go in there and I'd start telling people what to do. And I was working really hard. I was constantly in firefighting mode and it really wasn't working well. And the other thing, and this is true in the industry, but for him particularly, there was lots of turnover. He said people would come in and come out, I wouldn't even know who they were, that they were this revolving door of faces, because he thought of his workers like these worker bees, kind of going back to that old school leadership of just, they're just parts in the machine. And he was just working hard, and he got to this place where he realized, I'm working so hard, there's got to be a better way. And what he learned over time was that people don't want a fixer. People want a leader. And what he started, and I asked him, tell me more. Like you said before, tell me more. What do you mean?
Tell me more.
Tell me more. Exactly. So I asked him, I said, what do you mean by being a leader? He said, first of all, people want to know that you care about them. And so he started asking them questions, like coming in, like you said before, Kevin, like, how was your weekend? And if they said they talked about the local sports team, then he knew that sports was important to them. If they talked about their family, then family was important to them. And so the next time he'd come in, he'd ask about the sports team or the family and starting to make these connections and then giving them space. And so when there were issues, instead of coming in saying, we have to fix this, do that, he'd stop and say, so here's something going on that I can see from the report. What do you think we should do? And instead of operating from this tell first, fix it mindset, he realized people actually were more resourceful than he thought if he gave them a chance. And as he started to do this, his results got better. And the loyalty on his team went up, the turnover went down. And the amazing thing about the story is, as Matt worked his way up the hot list to become number one, the way he described it at the end, he said, you know, it's amazing. I think back to when I was at the bottom of the pack, I worked way harder than I do now. I was way more stressed and it really wasn't fun. I am having so much fun now. So many of the people, he's mentored a number of other district managers, are former store managers of his in the past. He said, I love it because I realize if I can unleash the power of people, they will show up and do some amazing things. So I just love the fact that not only is he number one, he's not working as hard. So it's, again, it goes back to working smarter, not harder, which again, we all want to do. No one wakes up and thinks, I'm going to work stupid today. No one thinks that. And so it's all goes back to what are the choices that we make? And not only the choices, but what are our priorities? And if we prioritize connection, communication, collaboration, it's going to unlock some secrets that are going to help us to become better leaders.
What's so great about that story is there's all kinds of people who listen to the LeadX Leadership Show and you know, follow my work, but a lot of them are younger, first-time managers, less experienced managers. And this is a classic thing where you got promoted into management because you were really good as an individual contributor. You worked hard, you fixed stuff, you're smart.
Yeah.
And so back to behaviors and patterns, right? You carry those in as a new manager. And the hard part about this is usually you do have the right answer. You do know how to solve the problem. You can, you know, do it faster than everybody else, but that's not the point. That'll fix it one time in the short term. And next month it's a new employee with a new problem.
Yeah.
And there's never enough hours in the day. So only when you like get all Yoda on people and kind of transcend and say, okay, I'm getting results through people. I'm focusing on the medium and long term, not, you know, let's fix this in 5 minutes.
Yep.
Then everything shifts. Then you know, it totally changes. That was such a great story about Matt. Everybody should be like Matt.
Exactly. Be like Matt.
This has been just incredible. Again, it's Cracking the Leadership Code. Alon, if people want more information about the book and your work and maybe want to get in touch, where should they go? How can they get more information?
Sure. The easiest place to find my work and me is to go to www.crackingtheleadershipcode.com, and that'll take you right to the book page. And when you're there, you can actually download chapter one of the book for free, so you can get a little preview of what it's all about. And from there, that'll link right to my alainhunkins.com website, and you'll find it right there. But it's alainhunkins, Alain. It's a French name. My mom is from Belgium, whereas I grew up in Queens, right in New York City. So that's why I came up with another web address, because no one can spell Alain or can even pronounce it. So there you go. So yeah, you can find all about the work that I do. And obviously I do speaking and consulting and coaching with leaders and teams all around the world.
You've given us a lot of wisdom today and your time, both important gifts. Thanks for coming on the LeadX Leadership Show.
Oh, it's been a complete pleasure. Thank you, Kevin.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders, because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, leadx.org, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?